This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. What do you know about genetics and how our genes are passed down? Well, you're probably aware that the things we do to our bodies, like smoking, and the things that happen to us, like malnutrition, can influence our offspring. But to what extent? It turns out scientists are really only starting to grasp how the changes to our genes can have a long-term impact. The field is called epigenetics, and some significant work in it is playing out in Milwaukee. Dr. Rob Lane chairs the pediatrics department at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin and at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He tells Lake Effect's Mitch Teich that for all we know about how DNA shapes us, it only tells half the story.
An easy way to think about it or to see a good example of it is all of your cells have the same DNA sequence. But obviously a hepatocyte, a liver cell, and a brain cell, a neuron, are very different, despite the fact that the DNA sequence is exactly the same. The reason that they're different is this concept of epigenetics, that your body is capable and your cells are capable of three-dimensionally regulating the sequence to determine what genes are expressed. And what genes are expressed determines what those cells do and how they function.
Well, and I gather there are some genes that are expressed, and then there are some that kind of lie dormant. Is that right?
Absolutely. You need different genes at different times, and that's one way to regulate it. And that's sort of the beauty of epigenetics. I do a lot of cooking as my hobby, and it's like having that one pan that you can do a lot of things with. Epigenetics can function on a very static level. It's what keeps your neurons, your brain cells, neurons forever. You don't want your brain cells changing. So it's a very hard-wired system. On the other hand, epigenetics is also responsible for your minute-to-minute, hour-to-hour variations in gene expression as you adjust to the world. So there's a lot of flexibility in how epigenetics works in some parts of your genome and in some mechanisms, and others that it's very concrete and similar regardless of who you are.
Well, and so we've known about the concept of the epigenome for some time now, but there are obviously strong inheritance linkages in the development of DNA. But how much of the epigenome in a newborn starts from scratch, and how much is inherited or influenced by past generations?
That is the spot-on question. And the belief at this point is that it absolutely is affected. The question, of course, is how much is it affected, and can you reprogram, if you will, some of these differences? We really don't know. And the reason we don't know is that it's so hard to take the scientific method to epigenetics because there's so many things in play. So when we do studies on humans and we see differences in epigenetics, we don't know whether they are markers of something that's already happened or they are the actual cause. And going back and testing that is one of the great challenges.
I know there are a couple of large-scale studies involving famines that have,
yes,
that have demonstrated at least what appears to be a link.
Right. And this is part of what's often been called the fetal origins of disease hypothesis or the Barker's hypothesis. And the classic study that sort of started into the scientific community's consciousness was the Dutch famine. And the Dutch famine occurred at the end of World War II, and there was a very regulated decrease in calories, about 600 calories per day, regardless of who you were. And what was observed, two things. The first is in that generation, based on where your mother was in the pregnancy, you had a statistical increase for different adult diseases, even though you have survived the famine and you've eaten fine because the war was over. We're now seeing, even in that second generation, that there are some differences. If your grandparents suffer through the famine with a pregnancy, again, there seems to be these long-lasting effects. And certainly, of course, multiple other famines. The Chinese famine is one that we don't write about as often. There's evidence that if your family member experiences an incredibly biologically stressful event, it will affect health two, three, four generations later.
But at the same time, your epigenome is evolving in its own way as well, right?
Right. And that's actually one of the great challenges in it, is that not only do you have your epigenome that hardwires things like the type of cells, but you also have – all your cells have different epigenetic profiles. Based on our genders, we have different epigenetic profiles. There are even differences based on where you grew up. So trying to pull out that information and understanding what's real and what's noise is the challenge. That being said, as we all have the goal of having population health and personalized medicine, which are interrelated, the epigenome, because of its complexity, is one of the aspects of biology that if we figure it out, if we use the computational power that we have, that there is the possibility to explain or allow for the variation in the complexity of human existence and actually be able to predict the risk for disease.
So you might be able to say, as you look at a patient today, well, this person's mother or father or grandfather mm-hmm. was exposed to such and such a factor, so he or she might be at higher risk for disease A, B, or C.
Right. And we may even be able to take it a step further. Based on some of the patterns we see in the epigenome, you may be able to say that we know there's a risk just on that exposure, but there's even a higher risk, and that's worth interventions that have some risk to them by themselves, but the risk of the disease is greater than the risk of the intervention, so we should intervene. And in contrast, that person who doesn't have that increased risk based on what you see in the patterns of the epigenome, you don't have to do those interventions that are either costly or potentially risk-inducing.
One of the things that popped to mind as I was studying about epigenetics and getting ready for this interview is the idea of the similarities in identical twins and how they might begin to differ as they age. Is that epigenetics at work?
That is epigenetics at work. That, you know, one of the things that was helpful to us, because when we started doing epigenetics about 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't considered very hip. We were told we were being Lamarckian. And that change, one of the first observations were is that identical twins do differ in terms of their epigenetics. And the farther apart they get, the more differences there are.
Is there something to the idea of witnessing evolution at work in this field?
Absolutely. That's where we get to the Lamarckian concept, is that in many ways it shows just how doggone bright the Celestial Design Committee is, in that this is a way for us to have some plasticity in our development, to adjust to our environment. If we go back to those famines, one of the things that's been speculated on is that if you do experience this famine, it tends to program you to those adult diseases we don't like, things like obesity, hypertension, diabetes. But if you think about it, thousands of years ago, if you were going to anticipate as a fetus, as a baby, a bad environment, you would want to program yourself to store lots of fat, because if you do get a chance to eat, you want to keep it with you. Our brains depend on glucose, and so you would want to make the rest of your body insulin resistant so that you have as much glucose as possible to your brain, because that's what really makes a difference. And you want to be a little bit hypertensive, because that's going to allow, when you're running, for you to run faster and perfuse the things you want to perfuse. If you live to the age of 20, it's not that big a deal. Now that we live to the age of 50, 60, 70 and enjoy custard, it becomes more of an issue.
Well, and so this really does sound like, think of evolution playing out over, you know, epochs.
Yes.
But this is really scaled way, 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 way back.
Yes. There's a plasticity to this that it's almost a generation by generation response. And that is what's so attractive to it in terms of being a physician, is because if you can help somebody, if you can decrease a risk by adjusting epigenetics, so we know we can do that with diet, then you may be able to affect the outcomes by an early intervention in childhood of those adult diseases that so plague us now in the U.S.
And those seem like relatively reachable goals. I mean, you would be in a better position to weigh in on that than I would. But I wonder, way down the road, are there implications for how we actually might treat disease? I mean, are there implications for medicine itself? Might we be able to go in and manipulate the epigenome in a way that we talk about doing, you know, genetic engineering?
There are. And I guess for me, I think of it in three different potential waves. One is the concept of either life course or lifestyle medicine. And epigenetics really provides a paradigm that if we want to treat adult diseases, for example, we need to pay attention to what's happening in childhood and what's happening in pregnancy. And epigenetics provides a platform for that. The second component of it is that we do know that diet makes a difference, and we can show that. We can be objective about it. And so we can get a better understanding of who's going to respond to changes in diet. Where we should go and where we're hoping to go eventually is exactly what you said, is can we change our epigenome? And the key to it is because different cells, different tissues respond to these general sort of shotgun interventions like diet. But there's the possibility that we will be able to affect the epigenetics of specific genes and specific cells. And so if you can do that, you can almost do gene therapy without some of the long-term risks or consequences that we are so concerned about in terms of gene therapy now.
This is a ways down the road, though.
This is a ways down the road.
Well, Rob Lane, thanks for giving us kind of a reality check, a primer on epigenetics.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Rob Lane chairs the Department of Pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin and at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he's a specialist in the field of epigenetics. He spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke, and you can find links to much more about epigenetics from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we'll jump on the fitness bandwagon with a new monthly segment on everything from working out to eating right. Join us when Lake Effect returns with our new contributor, Ken Weber, right after this.